Well, hello there, folks. You're listening to the Punk News Podcast of June 25th, 2013. My name is Tobias Jegg. I have the honor of being responsible for the money pit that is known as Red Scare Industries. Of course, you've heard of our bands, of course. And yeah, that's me. I'll be joining our friends Adam White. He's a famous Canadian nationalist. And also with us on the show is Chris Moran from Richmond, Virginia. He has a face for Skype, as they say. Fellas, hello.
Hey!
How'd I do?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, at least as good. Well, okay, I was going to say at least as good as us, but then something happened to my throat that was weird. So better than that, yeah.
Well, I tell you, I do have an Emmy nomination. I don't often talk about it, but I think now's a pretty good time to bring it.
Yeah. Is it one of those, like, artwork Emmys? Like, you contributed to the artwork?
No, real funny. No, well, for a while, there's a station, a TV show called JBTV, and they made the mistake of letting me be like a host for a while. And one of the episodes in which I interviewed Frank Turner, of all things, it was great. It came out really good and it got nominated for an Emmy. And just when you think you're like really cool, it's like, yeah, I got a fucking Emmy nomination. The thing is, the punchline is that like I got a nomination, didn't win because the show that was about kayaking actually won. And I think actually we finished third behind the show about pork products or something. So, you know, It's great to get the nomination, but when you lose big like that, it's a real it's humbling, guys. It's real humbling.
Did you get to go?
You know, I was actually traveling in. I was visiting my family in Germany at the time, so I didn't go. But it would have been. It looked cool. You know, but no, I didn't go.
Well, you know, like if you're gonna lose to something, you may as well lose to kayaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Says the Canadian.
Yeah. Like, was this, like, on rapids or, like, flat water kayaking?
It was a guy who was, like, doing the tricks in the rivers, like, turning over in the water and shit like that.
I mean, you no contest, right? So.
Yeah, how can you compete with that?
As long as it's not those assholes that stand on those boards and just, like, kind of paddle themselves as they're standing, I hate that shit.
No, that's not kayaking. I tell you what, though, the interview I did with Frank Turner was pretty good. And actually, the only reason why it is good is, again, because him, he's pretty telegenic, and he's pretty fun guy.
He has blown off this podcast on three separate occasions.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is my fifth time. I finally showed up. You know,
maybe we got three more to go.
Mm. So, I mean, speaking of British people.
Oh yeah, speaking of British people, yeah, this segs into why I'm here, and I mean, I don't want to be completely lame about this, but one of the reasons why I'm joining you is because Punk News is sort of you're sponsoring the Red Scare Across America tour, which is very nice of you. We sort of involved some of like the people that got Red Scare off the ground. It was like you guys and Interpunk, and it makes sense to kind of, you know, we put you guys in the posters, and every once in a while you let me show up and kind of plug our bullshit. And which brings you to a song that we're doing for this podcast, and it is, I guess, it's the first time people will hear it. It's exclusive in that. We're actually doing, we haven't really announced this yet either, but we're doing a tour 7-inch. It has three exclusive songs from the bands that are on the traveling package, you know. So there's a new Mass Intruder song, there's a new Elway song, and there's a new Sam Russo song. And the Sam Russo song I think is awesome, and I was actually just talking with him today. He's on tour with Tim Berry in the UK. And I was like, dude, I love that new song. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm closing with it. So it's kind of cool, and it's kind of neat that it worked out that we can play it on this podcast and that we're like, talking about it. Anyhow, the song is from Sam Russo and it's called Sometimes.
I got into my car and I didn't get out for the best part of 3 weeks. Yeah, I had to drive, I had to find some peace. Yeah, I just knew I had to leave. I just felt so weak, and I knew somehow that pretty soon I'd break. And all the good things would become mistakes. Yeah, all good things become mistakes. Around here. And sometimes, I know I make things worse. And sometimes, I just wanna hide. You gotta let it hide. 'Cause when you blame yourself for the things you did, yeah, things you cannot change. It fills your heart and soul with rage. Fills every sky you see with rain. So now I take it slow. It's getting easier to accept the good things. And I'm learning how to forgive. Oh Lord, I can't wait till I can forgive myself. And sometimes, I know I make things worse. And sometimes, I just wanna hurt. You gotta let it hurt. Ain't it funny how three words can say you're so? Ain't it funny how three words can say you're so? And sometimes, I just make things worse. And sometimes, it just fucking hurts. You gotta let it hurt. 'Cause it ain't love if it don't hurt.
Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. Again, Chris Moran here with Adam White and the illustrious Tobias Jegg of Red Scare Industries. Yep, he is illustrious because he has quite the shine on him.
Huh?
Yeah.
What?
And wasn't that a good good song Toby just played, eh?
It was pretty good and a hell of a segue, too. I'm 36 years old. The shine, the luster has faded, but Appreciate the comments. Appreciate the words.
Hey, that's what we do here. Well, speaking of things that, I don't know, don't shine. So we're gonna get into some stories this week. Let's talk a little bit about this craziness with the Bronx. Apparently, their drummer has called out the band. They're called Black Veil Brides for using what's considered to be a fairly common stage prop, but nonetheless, they thought it was pretty lame. What they basically noticed the Black Veil Brides, who are headlining Warped Tour, I guess. I don't know. I've never even fucking heard of them. They do that old trick where they have lots and lots of cabinets stacked up or speakers for the non-musical jargon-o type, and they're hollow. It's kind of like when you look at like one of those AC/DC videos and you see like a stack of amps that are
we've all seen the fucking Darkness video. And yes, you're right, they're doing the thing that like Van Halen would do where they put, you know, 50 cabinets on top of each other, and it's like, yes, I'm sorry, go on.
And that's the whole thing though. So the Bronx called him out and basically posted a picture of it. It was the Bronx drummer Andy Biersack, I think you pronounce his last name, and he just I'm sorry, that's the Black Veil Brides singer. It was the Jorma Vick is the drummer of the Bronx, and he said, quote, "A friend of mine took this picture, a picture of the empty cabs at Warped Tour. This is what the kids are calling rock and roll these days. I'm lighting fire to every drum I have and becoming an investment banker." So in response, Andy Biersack, who is the Black Veil Brides vocalist.
Biersack?
Yeah, it's B-I-E-R-S-A-C-K.
Oh, all right.
Sounds German. Tobias, is that a German name?
Yeah, it's German, sure.
Biersack.
Look, I gotta say, while I totally agree with this, I rant about Taylor Swift because she's kind of a sham, and it's a fucking, her whole thing about how she writes songs is you know, bogus. And I get sanctimonious about this thing too. But at the same time, like, who's really fucking defending the Warped Tour? I mean, Warped Tour is a ridiculous, like, festival show with big fucking bands like Black Veil Brides, who are huge. They're a big metal band. So it's like, pick your battles a little bit, I guess. While I agree, it's this kind of shit is pretty ridiculous. If I saw Against Me doing something like that, or a band that I had any respect for, or came from the underground, I'd be like, "Man, that is fucking, you got to be shitting me," you know. But it's this band that they were like put together in Hollywood, and they all have like ridiculous Jennifer Aniston hair and shit like that. So I would have assumed that they had bogus cabs, but. Yeah, the point is, like, why is this kind of shit involved in the Warped Tour, which I guess, for whatever reason, people still associate with punk rock and stuff. So, I mean, yeah, at the same time, it's like the Bronx. Like, I don't know, those guys put on mariachi outfits and pretend to be in the band. So, but I'm sure maybe there's probably some fucking really outraged Latino artists who call their shit out, too. So, I don't know. Am I making any sense? No. How am I doing, guys?
I think you're on point, and it just made me think about something when you said that. That is it me, or is this sort of a is it sort of like this is a symbol for what is Warped Tour? Just one big hollowed out cab.
Big hollow. Right. Right. I mean, yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, looking at this, I'm reminded, and this is not me being really stereotypical, but I want to talk about Rush for a minute. And
that's stereotypical of you, actually, but go on.
It is, isn't it? Well, I mean, so Rush started playing with just ridiculous stacks of shit on stage because they didn't actually need like giant cabs or anything, so they were trying to figure out what to do. And I know that. I don't know. They played a big show in Toronto that was televised here, and this is me keeping my punk cred. This is why I saw it. And they played with like a bunch of it was like washing machines or dryers stacked up at the side of the stage instead of amps. And apparently, according to my extensive Google research that I was doing right now, they've sometimes played where they've had a bunch of chicken roasters on the side of the stage. So that would be cool. I would be okay for that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like they're the pioneers of appliance core.
Yeah, I mean, now I think I saw someone somewhere trying to defend them that they were just saying that like, well, these are just the boxes that the band carries their shit in. But that was
I saw that too.
Which I mean, I guess maybe that doesn't really justify it though.
Well, the best.
You know, before we, I mean, maybe Rush had like a Macy's sponsorship though. Like maybe it, like it came off as a joke to you, but in truth, there was some branding going on there. How about that?
You know, there's probably a fair amount of people that are in the crowd at a Rush show that are really fucking into it that need new washer and dryer set.
You know, I guess Paint It Black kind of, they brought up an interesting point. I guess it segs into the other sort of, the other story burning up the interweb about what's going on the Warped Tour. But Paint It Black said like, hey, all this stuff with the fucking bogus cabs and like the Wall of Death controversy or the mosh pit controversy. I mean, Don't you feel like Warped Tour has gotten pretty desperate that they're resorting to doing this stuff in order to get publicity? And I never even thought of it as though that they were trying to garner publicity or they were doing this shit intentionally. But, you know, I'm going to defer to Paint It Black and say, yeah, it is fucking lame that they're doing that. Like, I'm just going to agree with them on that. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that other story here. I'll do the read on this one, Chris, because I'm already talking. Oliver Sykes, the vocalist of English hardcore outfit Bring Me the Horizon, took to Twitter to claim that Warped Tour officials are apparently prohibiting bands from using terms like mosh pit or wall of death. The singer explained, "By law, I'm no longer allowed to say mosh pit or wall of death or anything of the like, so whatever you do, don't mosh. Too many parents suing." Now, the singer said by law, but, you know, it's a practice that's been put in place by Warped Tour, not by, you know, Congress or anything like that. I love that this is a story that Aubin wrote on the site, too. Like, he felt the need to jump in and say, hey, guys, this isn't actually a law. Thanks, Aubin. But anyways, so that happened, and it sounds lame. And then people have been talking to Kevin Lyman on Twitter about this. And so here's what some of his responses were. And this comes from something that Property of Zach, which is another website, posted. They said someone asked him, hey, please clear up the issue. People are saying moshing is banned. And he said that's not true. And then he said, why aren't bands allowed to encourage moshing? It's inevitably going to happen anyways. I'm just curious. And he responded, if you do it, fine. If the bands do it, they become responsible for all the injuries that occur. People do not take responsibility. And then someone is like, well, that's fucking lame. I'm paraphrasing. And then he said, but in America, that leads to many lawsuits. Ever sat in one? I've been through many. So no fun and costly. So there you go. That's Kevin responding. So,
What about, hey, where do circle pits fall into this? Because you don't see a lot of bands saying, hey, guys, mosh. You'll see them saying, do the wall of death, but typically they'll say, all right, we're going to play this song. We want to see a big fucking circle pit. I mean, where does that come into the fray?
It's probably banned. I don't know that I'm assuming it's banned.
I think it's the same shit. Look, there was another tweet that Kevin had put out there too that I think is kind of noteworthy, and I don't know if I approve of this, but I agree with the sentiment. You know, kids are like, what the fuck? Well, if bands can't tell us when to do the wall of death, or if bands can't tell us when to do this, what the fuck are we supposed to do?
I mean, someone's got to coordinate it.
What the shit? And he says, like, hey man, be a leader and start the pit yourself. I don't know. It's symptomatic of the Warped Tour. There's fucking hollow cabs and there's kids standing there wanting to be told what the fuck to do. And, you know, I'm not gonna like bag on Warped Tour like every other asshole does, but
you just did like 5 minutes ago.
Well, did I? Okay, yeah. Look, I will say this much. One thing I think of Warped Tour is critical. I mean, there's a lot of things people should be critical of the Warped Tour, but, you know, I think it's how it started off as a tour that was punk rock bands, and that, like, you know, I remember I talked to Kevin years ago when Against Me had just signed to Fat Records, and he was calling me. He's like, yeah, I need to get a hold of Against Me. This band's blowing up. I want to get him on board. Like, well, and I was like, well, you know, kind of a pretty DIY band, Kevin. You know, I, and he's like, well, that's great. You know, they can go back to playing basements. As soon as they're off the Warped Tour, they're just going to play bigger basements. And, you know, regardless, the sentiment, I liked it. It would sort of made me think, like, oh, shit, this guy really does. This guy is down with, like, cultivating the underground scene, and he wants to, you know, enable punk bands and shit. And, that's fine. But one thing is the Warped Tour has completely abandoned that stuff, you know. And, like, now they really have just they've gone with whatever the flavor of the month is, be it like the screamo stuff or, you know, EDM stuff, EDM music, or the Paramores of the world or what have you. But at the same time, even though Warped Tour, maybe they are having trouble selling tickets. That's kind of what I'm kind of hearing. I like that, like, on the other side of the coin, there's Riot Fest, who has like traditional punk rock bands like Bad Brains and The Replacements and Mission of Burma. And they're going to have 40,000 people at those shows all weekend. So, I mean, you know, what do you know? Warped Tour is pretty unpunk, but there's still, it's nice and encouraging to see that even though, like, they've abandoned more traditional punk rock, that there's another entity out there kind of doing it. And that's like the thing I think people should be more stoked on. I just, honestly, we talk about Warped Tour all fucking day and night, but I can't relate to it because I don't know any of the bands. I saw the Swellers are on there, and those guys kind of from the punk scene, you know, but that's about it, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because in the previous story where we talked about them, and I don't even remember what they're called with this name, whoever, Blackface Paint.
Blackville Brides.
Okay.
Blackville Brides, they're like it's not so much the name or the music, it's the hair and makeup. It's pretty impressive, really.
Okay, so anyway, so like they're one of those bands that like when we linked them in the punk news story, they had like no other mentions on the site, or they didn't have a band profile or anything like that. So it's like the headliners of Warped Tour, you know, there aren't even bands that we're talking about regularly on punk news at all. So I don't know. It's I guess we keep talking about it because it's what everyone grew up with, and it's so associated with the scene at this point. But yeah, now I have a, kind of like a interesting. Well, okay, two thoughts actually. The one is going back to kids not knowing what to do unless bands tell them to mosh. There's a I hate that. Like I don't need to be yelled at to be told what to do by the performer. Like if it's time to dance, should you not just dance and not be, you know, everyone dance and have a good time right now. And it's funny because there is a wedding DJ in town here that my wife and I absolutely hate that is always playing every fucking, you know, rubber chicken work dinner thing that we have to go to. And when, you know, he'll always kind of like get up and go to his mic and start playing, you know, some stupid song and be like, everyone stand. Like, hold hands.
This is amazing. You attend this many social functions and weddings that there's like, you've actually developed a sort of rivalry with the local DJ. Huh.
Yeah. Well, we went through that period. I think that people in like their early 30s go through where like everyone, you know, gets married. So we encountered them a few times more than in a year than we needed to, but yeah, we have a rivalry with like the local shitty wedding DJ. But we're a small town, so this is what we do for entertainment. Yeah. But anyways, that's what it reminds me of. I even thought that was weird. I remember when I was at like Warped and like, I don't know, I'm not a huge hardcore guy, but when I was watching some like quote unquote hardcore band and they'd be on stage and they'd be like, all right, everyone circle pit now.
Yeah. All right. Look, I get that. And from like a guy who I'm usually in the very back, like drinking a cocktail. I'm not going to pick up change in the pit or whatever anyhow. But I understand from a band's perspective, and you know, there is an element of showmanship, and also, you know, sometimes a crowd, you need to kind of interact with them. And it's dumb from I'm not trying to defend a, hey, everybody, you know, but there is some element to getting the crowd involved. And like, you know, the other thing is when people say like, hey, everybody move a little closer. Let's, I can understand that. I know like
I can understand that. Don't get me wrong. I'm just complaining. But the other question, this was a serious question for you though, was, There seems to be kind of like this legal undercurrent to this controversy where basically Kevin's just saying like, yeah, dance and do whatever the fuck you want. It's just that like, I don't want to get in shit because, you know, someone who I'm paying to perform for you has instigated this. Is that a usual concern? Like, does, you know, like Toby, you're involved in lots of, you know, in shows and representing bands and all this kind of stuff. Like, is potential liability caused by stuff that your band has told people to do come up? Like, is that a frequent, are you in court every other day? Or
yeah, I do my best to not get sued. I mean who was it, like Death by Stereo had the first sort of at least recently fatality at a punk show because of the Wall of Death. I think it was them.
It was in Virginia.
I don't really hear about it that much, but I tell you what, dude, I just saw American Nightmare played a reunion show at the Metro in Chicago, and they were real good. But you know, they wouldn't do the show if there was a barrier there. And so there's 1,200 kids who are no shit like walking all over each other. You know, the head walking stuff and like pretty intense dancing and shit. And I have no idea how so many people didn't get hospitalized out of that. And you know, at no point I don't know. Like, I assume when you go to a show, you're aware of the risks. I haven't really heard of any bands getting sued. The Warped Tour is sort of an obvious target because it has big corporate sponsors. And, you know, there's also, you know, tens of thousands of people attending the thing. So you're bound, just by the law of averages, you're bound to have more people, or some asshole is going to want to sue you eventually. I mean, you know, didn't somebody die at Warped Tour because of dehydration last year?
Last year or the year before, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, stuff like that. Now that's something where it's like, well, do people have access to water? I know that's one of the things these festivals, they get, you talk to any festival organizer and they'll start talking about the ancillaries and all this kind of shit about basically how to make the most money out of people. And I'm guessing if it was something where like a showgoer was dehydrated to death because they didn't have access to water, then I'm sure you might have a lawsuit on here. But I mean, to answer your question, I don't hear about people getting sued for at punk shows. It seems kind of weird, but at the same time, like Warped Tour, I'm sure Kevin's been sued a bunch for all sorts of weird shit.
What do you think, song?
Where is old Too Long Didn't Read John Gentile when we need him?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you see, that's the thing. When it's Adam and I, it's more just like unprepared, and we're both just kind of like, all right, let's do the podcast. All right, fine. John Gentile, like, fucking writes scripts and, like, has, like, stories and plot lines. And so you're getting, like, the half-ass version.
Good, good. Well, it's a hell of an ass. A hell of a half-ass.
It is indeed. Well, why don't you go ahead and, yes.
Oh, more tunes?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, since you've given me the floor here, this next song is from The Copyrights, and they're a band that's actually doing a tour right now. They're out there. They're one of the headliners for Insubordination Fest in Baltimore.
I love that band, Toby, by the way. I fucking love that band.
You should love The Copyrights. They're lovable. Yeah, and they're doing some shows at Direct Hit, doing a little East Coast tour. And also, as Punk News just sort of shined a light on this week, they're also doing that tour on the West Coast with the Queers and Teenage Bottle Rocket. So that's all that happens like in September or something like that. And I always thought when they do this tour, I was like, dude, I've got the perfect name for this fucking tour. Get ready. We should call it the Monsters of Pop Punk Tour. And nobody thinks that's a fucking good. Everyone always fucking shoots down my killer ideas. But yeah, I think they should call it the Monsters of Pop Punk Tour. And yeah, you know, and also I picked this song in particular. It's called Worn Out Passport because Adam White, you seem like a guy who's big on the travel business. So, you know, this song's about traveling. Do you ever go to Cuba, Adam?
I have been.
It's pretty kick-ass, huh?
I enjoyed it. I can't complain. I probably enjoyed it more because Americans couldn't go there.
Right. I figured, yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably the best. I mean, Canadians talk about how great it is to be Canadian. I mean, boy, do they ever. But one of the things, the best part about being Canadian, I would think, was be that you can go visit Cuba, which is one of the coolest places I've ever been. So anyhow, the song is called Worn Out Passport. It goes out to you, Adam White, world traveler. And here it is, The Copyrights. I want to die.
And that was The Copyrights. If you don't know who they are, you should by now. And if you still don't know, then stop listening to this podcast and go listen to any of their records. They're amazing. Here with Adam White and Copyrights, head honcho, manager, label, boss, dude, Red Scare Industries, Tobias Jegg.
Calm down. The Copyrights are from Carbondale, Illinois, and there's so much killer shit. It's like, it is like Chicago meets Appalachia. Like, there's drive through liquor stores, and it's amazing. You got to go. There's also some great spelunking down in southern Illinois. You may not know this, but caving is very popular down.
You know, Chicago is nothing like the rest of Illinois. It's like, once you get out of Chicago, it's like you're in a different country.
I mean, what can you say? We fucking took up all, it's like, we took up all the greatness, and I'm not fucking from Chicago. You know, that's the thing. When I first moved to Chicago, the punk scene was pretty, it's pretty, they're a little xenophobic, I guess, you know? Yeah. Some, especially the older guys, you know, it's like, oh, you're not from Chicago, or you transplant this. And
it's like DC, basically.
I guess. Well, I felt the same kind of thing in San Francisco, too. But these are cities where people, like, it's, you know, people go, like, everyone from Chicago is from Minnesota or Iowa or whatever. So, yeah, there are a lot of, like, natives and locals, but, you know, it's one of the things that makes the city pretty cool. Like, makes any city pretty cool is it has people from all over. But, copyrights. Carbondale.
Good stuff. Well, moving on back to sadder news. Mike McDermott, most of you know from his stint in the Bouncing Souls. Some of you may know from his other ska endeavors over the years. Has announced that he's leaving the band. He's been with them for 13 and a half years and posted the following message on his Facebook page. Quote, "After 13 and a half years with Bouncing Souls, I've decided to spread my wings and fly. I want to thank anyone who's ever worked with the band, and especially my three brothers in Music Arms. Mad love, respect." And the Souls responded by saying, quote, "Our brother and bandmate Mike McDermott has decided to leave the band to pursue other musical interests. It has been an amazing 13 and a half years. We love you and wish you all the best. Here's to the memories. We don't know what's next. We never have, but we know it's going to be rad on to the future." So,
Am I mistaken, but aren't they on tour in Europe, like, right now?
Yes, they are.
See, and that's what I'm, like, are the guys, like, sitting in their fucking Sprinter van, and they're like, hey, dude, what's this on your Facebook, man? I mean, it seems like some interesting timing.
Yeah, I'm a little perplexed by that. Do you have any insight on that, Toby?
You know, I don't. I tell you what, Mike McDermott is like an awesome guy. I mean, all the Bouncing Souls, that's kind of their thing, is that they're like, their records are great and those dudes are really awesome. And, you know, they're, that's why people love the shit out of them. I, for one, am actually, really happy about this news that Mike McDermott is leaving Bouncing Souls. And I'll tell you why, because the Bouncing Souls have, been making a real habit to carry on into the evening in my kitchen, or they usually, my wife runs a bar in Chicago, and they inevitably end up there after their shows, and then they go upstairs and we're just all hanging out and it's great. But fucking A, man, McDermott is always like the he's always there at like 4 a.m. He likes to go for it. And if I love the guy, but Jesus Christ, I can't party with him too much anymore, you know? So if this means less McDermott in my kitchen while the sun's coming up, then that's cool. But knowing my luck, he'll probably like move to Chicago and haunt me every day and, you know, be part of all the time. It's weird. You said it's just a stint, but shit, that dude's been in the band for over a decade. And
yeah,
you know, there's just like the coolest guys. They don't really change members. And, it's kind of sad, but you know, he played on that fucking amazing Summer Vacation record.
That was his introduction to being in the band.
Yeah. So it's, you know, that's a pretty big deal. And he's he plays in other bands too. He was in that Jim Rome, you know, ESPN band. No, the Sublime with Rome band. And,
Mephiscopheles.
Wasn't he in the Pie Tasters too?
No, he wasn't in the Pie Tasters.
No, he was in Skinner Box, King Django's band. They're one of them at the time.
Who knows what he's doing? I'm sure he's going to some awesome music, and I know I'm sure the Bouncing Souls are going to, you know, forge ahead.
Well, here's to you, Mike. Good. I hope you enjoy your Cherry Coke.
Yeah. You know, I one time he left. It was at one of his late night forays. He left his fucking Like, he had this really nice, like, velvet bag for his weed and his pipe or something like that. I know there was something hilarious. There was some hilarious, like, embroidery on it, too. I'm trying to remember what it was. But I was like, fuck, before he even went to bed that night, he's like, oh, dude, I left my velvet weed and pipe bag at your house. You need to ship that to me. And you goddamn right, I sent it to him. But, yeah, man. He's got some stuff going on, man.
Yep.
Oh, well, great dude. I mean, great dude, great bands. You got to think they're going to still, do awesome stuff. Who knows?
Well, we'll get back to Toby's encyclopedic knowledge of 90s ska bands in a minute. But before we do that, let's talk briefly about Against Me. So they finished tracking their next full length, which is Transgender Dysphoria Blues. So Laura Jane tweeted out that at the cost of a lot of friends and having probably ruined my life, finished tracking Transgender Dysphoria Blues, to which James Bowman added, "We fucking did it. Holy shit." So,
it's like a sort of yin to the yang there, Laura's pretty real half full on that one, Yikes.
Yeah. Well, it's weird reading half these stories these days too, because like no one like does press releases, which is great for like my email inbox. Everything's just like a tweet, so it's like, here's three words from this person about this. So anyways, the Against Me record is done tracking, so I don't know when this sucker is going to be out. As I'm sure a lot of you guys heard recently, Against Me is playing with Fat Mike is playing with them, and
I think Mike was just playing bass on those tracks. I mean, Against Me is sort of an aesthetic institution. You know what I'm saying? Like when you see Against Me up there, there's that sort of thing. They're like, all in black, and they're like a unit. I don't know if Fat Mike's like purple mohawk and like bondage shorts are gonna jive with that. So I'm guessing he's only For studio purposes, is Fat Mike.
They're not going to let him up there in red plaid pants and.
Yeah. It would make for an interesting band. I know that they were also kind of auditioning some bass players, but I don't think they have any full. I tell you what, man, that White Crosses record. They kind of lost me there with New Wave, but I love the shit out of White Crosses. I still hear those songs come on the jukebox, and it's great. And that Russian Spies 7-inch was good too. So, that band can still crank out some hits. And I'm looking forward to this new record. But they've been recording, it seems, for like a couple of years.
Yeah, and the time that it's taken them to do this, I guess, worries me a little bit, because I liked White Crosses a lot too, and I really liked Russian Spies, and then the Laura Jane thing happened, and when that happened, you think, like, holy shit, like, the music they release after all of this attention and craziness is going to be just, incredibly heartfelt and real and da-da-da. But, man, I hope they haven't, like, re-recorded the same song 17 times, because I don't know how you, like, keep the fires burning that long.
Yeah, I don't, it seems weird. I'd rather they keep trying to perfect the same songs. One thing is about bands when they start like second guessing their output too much, or like overthinking it. Like, there are some people I know, some songwriters that have written complete albums, recorded them, and shelved them. And that's easy for me to like to be critical of, because I don't write songs and release them. But at some point, as an artist, I think you need to kind of take the plunge, and put your stuff out there. So from what I can tell, I think they are just trying to perfect the production element of this and solidify, that element of it. But, dude, sometimes it just takes a long time before you're happy with it. Who knows?
Cool. Chris, any thoughts on this one? Or you?
I just hope it's not, with all the time it's taken to do it, I hope it's just not our next Chinese Democracy.
Bing bong.
Oh. All right, now what you've all tuned in for. Here we go. 10 out of 10 on Pitchfork. So, Chris, you want to read this one? I don't even know.
All right. Yeah, so Save Ferris, you guys remember them, right? Toby, you remember Save Ferris?
Yeah, I mean, this is one I was really hoping. I'm going to need some help on this one, actually. I mean,
They did the Uh-Huh cover.
I know, Take On Me, they did that.
Wait, no, that was Real Big Fish. Which one did they do, Adam?
Come On Eileen.
Yeah, they did Come On Eileen, that's it, yeah. Anyway, okay. Anyways, they were a ska band, and they had, like, a hit, and they were kind of like Good Charlotte, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Anywho, So the singer of the band, what's her name? Monique Powell. Yeah, she earlier had tried to like do like a reunion show, or at least she claimed it would be at the Orange County Fair. Well, it turned out that it was just her using the band's name, which apparently has some value somewhere, and was just hiring a bunch of yahoos to play with her and billing it as the Save Ferris band itself. Well, the rest of the cats in the band didn't really care for it, and now they are suing her for false promotion. So.
It's a major, major fucking scandal here, guys. Yeah, I mean, Sorry, did I cut you off?
Not at all.
this is one of the, I mean, I actually, regrettably, when you guys told me we were going to be talking about that, I went and looked, and I still couldn't bring myself to care about this one. It does suck when I don't think that she wrote the songs either. I'm sure she probably got a bunch of money offered, and from what it sounds like, the rest of the band is interested in doing a show, but I'm guessing that maybe she probably doesn't want to split the money with them because they're like original members and you'd have to do that accordingly. What they should do is maybe get her and Ben Weasel to do like a duet thing, and they can all keep all the fucking money. It'll be great.
Well, that's thought.
So, Save Ferris, their I guess their hit record, It Means Everything, lives on in infamy as one of the famously out of character, like incredibly high Pitchfork reviews that they have now tried to hide from the world.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So they've deleted said review from their site. But I mean, here's the link to it in the Internet Archive. So it lives on. 9.5 out of 10. A band that has reached their perfect groove.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
They
record CDs that become quote keepers quote the mainstay of your collection, though they may quote go out of style quote someday.
Just maybe, yeah. That's pretty hilarious. One thing about Pitchfork, man, I mean, especially in this day, it's kind of brings everything full circle. You do need to have like females in your band. They love women in bands, and they love it if you're Canadian. So if you're like fucked up, or if you're white lung, you're on Pitchfork.
Anything
other than that, you're kind of fucked.
Oh, here you. This is fucking from said review. This is classic. So yes, a band in their perfect groove. I reach beside. To my DC City paper, which is like a free newspaper in DC, and began to frantically search for them live. That's when their cover of Come On Eileen came on. I think I came.
Serendipity, man. That's what I do whenever I go frantically looking through like the Entertainment Week, like where the fuck is the next Save Ferris show? It's gotta be happening. Well,
this was another time. This was back when You could turn to your alternative weekly paper and learn about things like Save Ferris, but
that's true. Remember
the economy just fell out on all that, right? So
yeah, I blame Punk News actually.
Oh well, we didn't help, and then
you certainly did. Well, we have time for another tune, right?
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about? You want to talk a little bit about this tour that you apparently have?
More, oh, is or? This? We done? Are we? You, the song is the last part. Yeah, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. So okay, go nuts. So, you have like all 20 of our listeners want to hear about this.
Right, right. Well, wait till I see what I've got in store for you. Yeah, I guess the tour. You know, it's the first time we did it in the past. We did smaller ones. We had one tour. The last Red Scare tour was the Cobra Skulls and the Menzingers and the Sidekicks, and they were all like baby bands, you know. So that was kind of funny, and it's always kind of neat to see like where the bands go from there. But this is the first one that we've like I've booked the tour, you know, and it's like 6 weeks long, and that itself was a really interesting process, learning about, you know, I mean, I know about it to some extent, but when you really dive in and you realize that, like, how is it that a promoter in St. Louis can, you know, how come there's so many more promoters in St. Louis or Denver as opposed to places like Seattle and Portland, which we kind of, anyhow, I won't bore you with the fucking details about the economy of booking a show and the ins and outs of it, but it was kind of an eye-opener, and it took fucking forever. We started booking it in January, and, you know, the bands are Mass Intruder and Elway and Sam Russo from England, and throughout the tour, there's going to be, like, other Red Scare bands that pop up, like Sundowners playing in Portland, Nothington in San Francisco, The Copyrights, Brendan Kelly in Chicago, shit like that. So it's kind of a cool family thing we're trying to do, Red Scare across America, and it's been a lot of work, and I'm just kind of hoping, A, you know, I'm really grateful that Punk News kind of wanted to get on board and be supportive of this, because it's been almost 10 years of you guys tolerating us and our nonsense. But, you know, I'm also hoping that, like, people go out to the shows, because we busted our ass on this, and we also talked the bands into doing this tour, and they're sharing one vehicle, which is, like, you know, you can see the icebergs ahead with this. Hopefully nothing breaks down or they don't fucking kill each other. But it's going to be kind of fun. It kind of, like, it has a little bit of a throwback vibe to it, kind of like that, what was that, the BYO movie where they're all getting a school bus and they drive across the country.
Another state of mind.
Another State of Mind, thank you. Who's Punk? You are. So, yeah, I don't know. I appreciate you guys letting me come on here and talk about it, and hopefully some people see the shows, and you know, the bands can go on and get signed to Epitaph and Fat Records, like the rest of them do, I guess, right?
You are running the farm team, right? So,
wait, what?
Yeah, you're the farm team, aren't you? Like
the farm team. I'm the one that has to deal with their you know, when bands first start, it's like herding cats, man. They're confused, they're lonely, they need help, and by the time they're done with me, we're both about ready to you know, be done with each other, and they go on to greener pastures. I don't mind that people talk about that, because, you know, I'm trying to help my friends' bands and let more people hear their music, and, you know, labels like Fat Records do a better job of that, and they get their bands on real tours, so they don't have to do this one, which is, I mean, serious, when you see, like, Elway's weird little school bus and gonna have three bands in that, it's gonna be great.
Cool. So what are you leaving us with?
Well, I think we should, since Elway is the band that is offering up their vehicle for sacrifice, we should finish with the song of theirs. It's from their new record, which is called Leave Taking, and like all of Elway's songs, it has all sorts of literary references and shit. I don't know, they're trying to make us think they read books or something, but this song is an homage to Sylvia Plath. It's a song, I really like it. It's kind of like the one of the faster, punkier songs. It's called Someday, Sea Wolf. And yeah, that's what it is. We're going to go right into it, or you got some parting words?
Now we'll do a little wrap up afterwards, but I think we're good.
I've got some party words. Yeah.
All right. Without further ado, it's Elway. Crank it or spank it, you know?
Spank it.
More. Seems that's what nights like these are for.
that's going to do it for this week's Punk News Podcast. I want to thank Adam White for joining us, and of course our special guest, Red Scare Industries proprietor Tobias Jegg, and I want to thank Toby for also providing us music for this week's show from The Copyright, Sam Russo, and Elway. Also want to thank Nightbirds for our theme music, and want to thank you, our dedicated and few and far between listeners, for checking out another production this week. Nairman, thanks for making us not sound like shit. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can hit us up, email podcast@punknews.org. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Vimeo, all those fun social media sites, or you can just talk shit under the comments of the story. That's it. Hope to catch you next week.